today, the 11th of July, Rabbi Joseph Freilich, The Grotesque Worship of Poe.
Right, this week's Seder completes the episode of the unfortunate confrontation between Am Yisrael and the Midyanim, and we find that the Kodesh Baruch Hu said that they had to wage a war against Midian. That's chapter Lamed Aleph in this week's Seder. Vadaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar, Nekoim Nikmas B'nei Yisrael Me'es HaMidyanim Achat Yosef El HaMechol. You have to take revenge against the Midyanim for what they have done to us. Vadaber Moshe Ha'om Lemar Yechol Tzimikhem Hashem V'hiu Al Midyan V'seis Nikmas Hashem B'Midyan. So Moshe told the Bnei Yisrael that we have to make a war to put Nikmas Hashem for Midian, to avenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu against Midian. It's very touching, the difference between the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe and the way Moshe speaks to the Bnei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, take Nikmas Bnei Yisrael Meis HaMidyanim. Moshe says, we've got to take Nikmas Hashem for Midian. Of course, what had Midian done wrong? Two major things. They had caused a lot of trouble for the Ribbono Shel Olam by weaning away the Am Yisrael from the Kedusha, by getting them involved in Znus and getting them involved in the worship of Baal Peor. And of course, they'd done a terrible amulet to Yisrael by the Megepho, which killed 24,000 people of Klal Yisrael. So we've got to avenge those two things. And each one is particular for the other one. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Mekoyim Nikmas B'nei Yisrael Me'es HaMidyanim. So he's taking for the terrible avil which the Midyanim did against Yisrael, that has to be avenged. And the Yisrael cares for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Moshe says to B'nei Yisrael, we've got to take Nikmas Hashem B'Midyan, avenge what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, what the Midyanim did against the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what exactly the Midyanim did against HaKadosh Baruch Hu has always puzzled me. There seem to be two completely separate things, and we jump from one to the other. On one hand, we talk about this Nus, which they did with the Bnei Yisrael and the Bnei Midyan. You find, for example, when they came back from the war and they hadn't killed the Nekevites, so Moshe Rabbeinu is very angry. Vayitzav Moshe, Vayoyim Aleim Moshe, Hachiyisim Kol Nekevah, you've left all the Nekevahs alive. Hein Hoyu Levnei Yisrael Bedvar Bilon. They were all the trouble that they caused to Bnei Yisrael on the advice of Bilon, Limsar Mal Bashem Al Devar Pa'oyah, to do a mal, rebellion against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, in the matter of Pa'oyah. That he had magefa by that Hashem, and it caused all this magefa. Now, what exactly was the trouble? Was it this nus, or was it the worship of Avodah Zarah? On one hand, you say it's the women that were involved in all the trouble, Bidvar Bilam, on the advice of Bilam, and we know Bilam says two sedders ago in Pashas Bolok, he said, Lecho Iyotso, I'll give you good advice. At the end, when he was a complete failure, he couldn't curse them. He said, they're blessed. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow me to curse them. He said, I'll tell you what to do. Elal Kem Shel Elu Soine Zimor. I know the God of these people. He hates Znus. He hates immorality. So if you can get your women folk, your wives and your daughters, get them involved in immorality, then they'll fall out with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Ribbono Shel Olam will do your job for you. That's my advice for you. And that's Nebuchadnezzar what Itaki did, and you had this terrible Megepho, and there was such a terrible loss in Klal Yisrael. I mean, terrible loss, we don't realize it, but 24,000 people, it's more than there was in the Mice of Koirach. The Mice of Koirach was 14,000 approximately, and the Mice of the Eagle were 3,000. 24,000 people, it's an enormous amount when you think you're talking about a population of 600,000 heathen in the Midbar. Out of that, even today in England, there's 24,000 people. It would be a terrible thing. And there, 24,000 people, and we somehow we don't we hardly notice it. It's the last person in the Seder. We're just about to close the Chumash. You are a Mason, I'm a gift for a boy, and swim or left, right, you close the Chumash and the other way. You don't really think that the words don't really sink in. What that means? 24,000, a terrible thing. So Bilam, you know, he was more successful than his wildest dreams. He really knocked it out. So this was the advice of Bilam, that a Kotbo can't stand Zimor. So get him involved in snus, and that's it. So that's snus. He didn't say, Elakim should Elu sign it, avoid the Zoro. Get him involved in the avoid the Zoro, or even get your windfall to help to do it. It's the snus that we are talking about. And yet here it says, look at these women folk. Hein hoi liv neisoi b'dvar bilam, limsar mal v'ashem, and dvar pa'oya. You're back to pa'oya. So it's mashmah the whole magepu was because of pa'oya. Now, earlier on, in chapter Kathay, that was in Pashas Bollock, at the very end of the Seder, so it starts off there, v'yochil ha'om, v'yeshu sol v'shitim, v'yochil ha'om liznois el benois moyo. Started, the trouble was, they did snus. Two psukim later, Vayit Somed Yisroel Baal Pa'oya. Yisroel became attached to Baal Pa'oya. Vayichav Hashem Yisroel. And then Moshe said, you know, you have to kill all the people. Here we are, Ish Anoshef and Yisrodim Le Baal Pa'oya. In Pa'oya. And then you find, Vayinei Ishmi B'nei Yisroel Bo Vayakev El Echves Hamid Yonis Le'ene Moshe Le'ene Kol Adas B'nei Yisroel Ve'hem O'boichim Pesach O'oyel Moed. You find this man Zimri ben Solu, the Nazi of the Shevet Shimon, he goes along and he takes this Midianite woman, takes her right in front of Moshe, and he goes with her, the biggest assholes you can possibly imagine, making fun of Moshe, the derisive, that takes her in front of Moshe, in front of everybody, and they go into the Ohel. And what do you think they were doing there in the Ohel? Do you think they were doing a Avodah Zarah then, Ohel? I'm sure they weren't doing a Avodah Zarah, it was something quite different. So you're back to snus again, and Pinchas takes his roimach and he sticks them through because of this snus. So what exactly is going on here? And again, in Parshas Pinchas, when it says Soroides Amidyon Mikisam Aysom, Kitzorim Heim Lachem Benichleim Hashem Niklu Lachem Al Devar Pa'oya. So fight against them because of what they did in connection with Pa'oya. Val Devar Kosvi Bas Nesi Midyon Achoysom. And which involved Kosvi, Batnitsim Midyan Achoysom, Hamukha Biyama Magefo, who was smitten. Why was she smitten? And the Bar Pa'oya, back again to Pa'oya. So what's going on here? So we've got to understand, what exactly was this avoider of Baal Pa'oya? That's the title that we put to this week, this grotesque avoider of Baal Pa'oya. As we know, Chazal say, that the avoider was the people were poyer themselves and they relieved themselves in front of this poyer. That was its avoider. I mean, it's the most strange sort of avoider. You can hardly imagine anything more grotesque than that. You would feel it's the biggest bozoyan. How does that come to be an avoider? I once had a Talmud. We were in a Shia, and you know, you always get some people that are a bit of a tip, you know, they always come out with funny questions. And he said, Rabbi, says, how could the B'nai Yisrael worship Pa'oya? Didn't we learn last week, when we learned about the mon, it was called the Lechem HaKloikel, because it was Nivla B'Evelim, nothing ever came out? Yeah, B'nai Yisrael were worried about it. They were afraid, how can a human being always keep taking in and never passing anything out? One day we're going to explode. Yeah, So, you know, how did you manage to wash the fire? You always ask these sort of funny questions, eh? And I must tell you, for a moment, you know, I was stuck tacker. Was the tacker the terrace? And, pardon? So, Baruch Hashem, one of the other Talmidim said, but it says in the Pasuk, V'yogel Om Liznas El Benoi Smoyer, V'tikrenu L'Om L'Zipche El Heihen, that the Benoi Smoyer, they called them, come, we're making a big party, you know, for our God, and we are going to have meat and everything to him. Vayoichal ha'om, vayishtachu le'lohen. Mam shvitz again, the people they ate, and soon they ate, vayishtachu le'lohen, so they had the wherewithal to serve Pa'oya. Anyway, that's probably correct terrors. Anyhow, what exactly is this very strange avoider? So Rav Shimshon the Poel Hirsch, he sums it up in three words.
And it's, these are words which echo to us today. He says it's the worship of shamelessness. It was a special cult. Nothing to be ashamed of. Throw away all your bushel. Throw away all your inhibitions. They're afraid of this, you're ashamed of that. Throw it all away. You know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And you can do whatever you like. You know, what you're doing, everything, every time you want to leave yourself, you know, you've got to go into a little room and hide yourself away, you lock the door, and you go, you know exactly what you're doing in that little room. Everybody knows what you're doing. What are you pretending at? You know? And it's not as if you're doing something special because you've got some maybe some medical condition. We're all exactly the same. There's a queue outside. As soon as you come out. So everybody's doing the same thing. So why on earth do you have to pretend? You have to hide. You have to lock the door and everything. Now it happens. You know, if you think about it, the idol worshipper. They would say, you know, look, what you feel a little bit ashamed because you're attending to the personal needs of your physical body. But when you eat, you know, it's the same. I mean, we do think we've got a long alimentary canal. The food goes in at one end and goes out the other end, right? So when we are eating, we don't hide ourselves away. We sit together as a customer. We sit around tables and we talk to each other and we look at each other while we're doing it. We have music playing. Nobody is embarrassed about it. Every week in the Hamadiya, there's dozens of pictures in the middle of our red. The whole eating, nobody is ashamed. So what on earth is going on here? You've been completely inconsistent. So the Pa'ai worshippers, you know, it sounds so grotesque to us, but when we start to think about it, they say to us, they say, listen, you know, if you want to be consistent, next time whenever you eat some food, to take a little bath, go into a little room, lock the door, hide yourself, sit down, eat your food when nobody's looking, wipe your mouth, clean, and go out and let the next person come in and eat his food. That's where you should do it. And if you're not, if you don't want to do that, you want to be consistent the other way, then you should do it when you want to leave. So sit around in a circle. We should all sit around in a nice circle, talk to each other while we're doing it, and have music playing. Exactly the same thing. And can't guarantee we'll have pictures in the Hamadiyah. So, you know, I could put up a very, very good case for it. You know, it's when we think at first, you hear about it, you think it's ridiculous, but when you start to think about it, I mean, I don't want to be too convincing, you know, but, you know, what is it all about? But we can understand that these Midianite women, you know, they said to the Bnei Yisrael, they said, come along, you know, we're going to have a big party, you know, come along and see our way of life, look at our different culture, our culture, come along, you know, we're going to have a party tonight, you come, we have good things to eat, and we have plenty of fun, and after the party, you know, we'll be doing other things as well, you know, which you'll enjoy. And you know, your God is so strict, he doesn't allow you to do this, he doesn't allow you to do that. You know, you go around with so many inhibitions and so many hang-ups you've got about everything. And this, the Pa'oya, it's a worship of freedom. You know, you're free, you know, you let everything hang out. It's just do whatever you want, whatever you feel like doing. You know, it's yours. And, you know, it's a very attractive proposition. It's not only attractive, but it's got a rationale to that philosophy. So you can imagine, you know, this is something which has resonance, and, you know, with Bnei Yisrael, you see, it's a wonderful idea. Hakol mutarim loch, hakol mechulim loch, hakol mechulim loch, in Kandor. It's everything is fine. I remember in the late 1960s, some of you might remember, you had what was called a permissive society. Remember, they had the same sort of cult, you know. Look, you know, when people sort of sneak across the street naked, you know, everything's permitted, you know, don't hang these hang-ups about things. I remember the time they called it the new morality, and I remember of Shimon Schwab in America, you know, he says, what are you talking about, the new morality? This is not the new morality, this is simply the old immorality. So, you know, but the fact is that heathen always sort of jump on anything new, and they jump onto the bandwagon. You find that, you know, in the communism or the most weird thing, but the heathen are all of a sudden in the forefront, and they very quickly get caught up, and they go, "Tack it, this is a new idea, this is wonderful, let's get involved with this." And you see how quickly they could sink. You know, I mean, they came along to the party,
Vayikro, Vatikrenul Om Lezif, and they called the people to join in the party. Vayachal Om, Vayushtafunahem, and the people ate, I mean, eating chafer meat. You know, there's often they sacrifice things, or shakta things, and they ate the meat. I mean, you're just being invited by these girls, okay, it's not about the time, but you're coming along and you sit down, yeah, and you have to pray for me, anything. It's scary how quickly anything can go by the board. So you see that it's wonderful when you learn these things, you think you're learning about some stage worship of thousands of years ago, but it's got, as I say, it's got resonance in today's society. There's very, very many similarities. And on the other hand, when you hear a new thing coming out today, you feel like, oh, Shemeshach, this isn't new. You know, 3,000 years ago, we did exactly the same thing. The fact is, of course, that this is terribly dangerous philosophy, and this is completely opposed to everything which we have in the Torah. I mean, our whole Torah is about self-control. You don't do anything which you want. You've got the Yetzer Hara, you've got desires to do this and do that, but everything has got to be done in the, of course we can eat, but there's some things are cautious, some things are safe, some things you can eat now, some things you need later, something not today. You have to have a mastery over your body, and you have to have control. And the same with nuts, which are things which are mutter, and things which are also people with which who are mutter, people who are also times which are mutter. The Torah gives us a control, and the fact is that without this control, if we really were to indulge in the Pa'ori philosophy, we know that many of the great empires of the past, they fell apart because of the rampant immorality. The great Roman Empire and many other empires as well, it sounds very nice for the time being, but after a while, you know, our whole society falls apart. So the Torah is absolutely opposed now to this whole worship of Pa'ori. It's not the little thing that you believe yourself, it's a philosophy, and we are completely misnugged. I mean, a kotzi, we are a million light years away from the whole thinking of Pa'ori. Once said, that interesting pasuk at the very end of the Torah, where it says that Moshe Rabbeinu died, Vayikbru Pa'ori, Mul Beis Pa'ori. They buried Moshe opposite the temple of Pa'ori. Now you think, you read that, it's not a very nice description of it, if you have a big goddle. And he said, you know, he's buried across the road from the pub, you know, from, you know, very, you know, so and so, you know, he's across the road opposite the King's Arms, you know, it's not a very nice description of a burial. So he's opposite Mul Beis Pa'ori. But I think what it means is that Moshe Rabbeinu lies buried, but he has left us here a legacy, and in his burial, in Moshe Rabbeinu's death for all times, you know, he's left us a legacy which is complete, the counterpart and the complete opposition to the whole philosophy of Pa'ori. So this is what we stand for. So the Yidden get involved and they get carried away, and more Yidden carried away. You can imagine this sort of picture. More and more Yidden, it's a runaway thing and you can't stop it. Very, very hard, you know, once you get involved, and you know, come on, Tati, we go to the B'nai Smita and we have a good time, we eat without the fire, it's great, you know, what do we need all these inhibitions for? And you get caught up in this, and once you get, this is what comes away, that it's very, very hard to stop it. I remember Abba Hull, the Morris Hull, when he came to Kingsbury, he'd been in the gate of Yeshiva for a few years, and then he became the Rav. He was the first Yeshiva man who became a Rav in one of the United Synagogues. And the poor fellow, you know, he didn't know what he was in for. So he came to Kingsbury, and he saw the shul. They used to use the shul hall for social events, you know, very nice. All of the social, and they used to have dancing, you know, mixed dancing, boys and girls used to come along and they used to dance. So he just come from Gateshead, so gosh, this has to stop, you know, we can't have mixed dancing in the synagogue. And you know, he said, it's all got to stop. Why has it got to stop? No, it's against the halacha. You know, it's got to stop. And there was one woman that was very, very furious with him. She said, Rabbi Hull, what's all this nonsense going on? You want to stop? It's lovely the boys and girls come together, and they meet each other, and they're social, and they're so, you know, what's wrong with it? So, you know, she said, you know, it's perfectly natural. There's nothing wrong with boys and girls dancing. That's a normal way of everybody. What you want them to go to the Goyshe dance halls and things that's good, they should be doing here in the synagogue. He says, I'm very sorry, but our Torah, you know, considers that mixed dancing, you know, it's immoral. He says, what are you talking about immoral? There's nothing wrong with mixed dancing. It's perfectly natural. That's not immoral at all. He says, I've got a cousin, and she told me that last week she was in Stamford Hill at a very Orthodox wedding, Hasidic wedding, and she saw this with her own eyes. She saw men dancing together. Now that's what I call immoral. Poor Morris Bull, you just come to the gate there. He didn't know what it did him. But you can imagine, you know, it's very difficult to stop this. So the Bonsham had to use drastic, he had to send them the gaffer. Had to come along, and the gaffer people are dying. And you've got the debts mounted up till they came to the enormous figure of 24,000. But the people still didn't take any notice. The people felt, okay, there's a megaphone, there's something, there's a disease, there's an illness. But, you know, if you said, you know, this is because of your pa'oyah, what's it to do with the pa'oyah worship? It's got nothing to do with it. It's a disease, unfortunate. I mean, I remember when AIDS first came out, and it was some galah. He said that AIDS is God's punishment for homosexuality. He was hooted out. What are you talking about? Nonsense, you know, AIDS, it's a virus, it's a thing, you know. Nobody wanted to hear of that. Nobody wanted to make any connection. I mean, last week I heard a Dalit said that the floods are because of the immorality, and God is getting it. And I mean, I don't know how he said that. I don't know how he knows exactly why God is doing things. But still, I mean, people just don't listen. And so they were carrying on doing what they were doing. And this is the pshat. When it says that Ishmael b'nei Yisrael bore the Yakev and Echor as Hamidyonis le'enei Moshe le'enei Gatz b'nei Yisrael, so he brought this Midyonis to in front of Moshe, v'heima boichim pesach oil moed, and they were crying. The people were crying. Now why were they crying? And that's very shocking, that when they saw Zimri doing this, they cried. But I think if the crying would be as a result of Zimri coming, it would say that he came to b'nei Yisrael. By Yitzku, and then they cried. But Vahema Boichim, while they were crying. In other words, while they were crying, they were crying all the time because all the people were dying. Everybody lost relatives. And yet, in the midst of all this, Zimri is coming along, and he's doing, and he's derisive to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, you know, when Zimri comes along and does a thing like that, I mean, the chutzpah, you know, can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, you go, you know, like that, you know, here we are, you know, I don't get things, Midyonis, and things like that, and you're a responsible person, you're head of Nossi Shimon, and you're doing a thing like that, you know. The fact that Zimri could do that showed that everybody else was not very far behind. You know, it wasn't a solitary thing. If you go on holiday somewhere, and you walk into a synagogue on a Shabbos morning, and you would see a man coming in without a kapu, and he walks to his seat and he's got a cigarette in his hand, and he goes to his seat and he stumps out the cigarette, and then he takes his tea out and he opens up his box and he fishes out a kapu and puts it on his head. I mean, you'd get an impression what sort of a shul this is. It's not a very frum shul. There's 500 people in a shul. There's just one man who's doing this. How are you judging the whole shul from this one man? Yes, you can. If one man dares to do that, then it shows that the whole shul is not, maybe they wouldn't quite go as far as that. They would put the kapel on sort of just as they come into the, you know, in the foyer, still they would put on the kapel. But people are not shocked by somebody walking in without a kapel, and they're shocked by somebody walking in with a cigarette. It's an index to the thinking of the whole. So if Zimri would come along with his midyonis and do this in public, so it shows that they were all doing it. Okay, they weren't doing it quite as public. He was the tip of the iceberg. But, you know, he was doing it. So it shows all the people were doing this. So, you know, what do you do? So this is something which is a terrible state of affairs. They're all doing it. They're all crying. And there was, I remember once heard from Rabbi Bernstein that, you know, at the Tower of Babel, they built the Tower of Babel, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu was very angry, and he came along and he diffused the whole thing. What was wrong? What was the avada of the Tower of Babel? So various pshatim. What pshat is that they felt that there was going to be a mabul again, so they'll build a big high tower, and the mabul comes, they'll all go up, they'll have a penthouse up on the top, they'll all go up into the penthouse, and they'll escape the flood. So So he said, somebody said to him, so Rabbi Bernstein, what's so sinful about wanting to escape from the flood? There's nothing wrong with wanting to escape from the flood. I said, Nevera. And he said, I'll tell you why it's a Nevera. Because the flood came because the level of morality had sunk so low that a Kodesh Baruch Hu had to destroy the world. And you would expect that after the flood, in the generation after the flood, they would say, listen, we've got to pull ourselves together. We don't want this to happen, so we better change our way of life, change our whole, the parameters of our way of living. But no, they don't want to do that. They want to carry on living the same way as they were living before, only they want to escape the consequences, they want to escape from the flood. And this is what's happening. People want to carry on doing what they're doing. I mean, even in Einstein, they're looking for ways of getting over this virus, of getting, you know, medical ways. Nobody's thinking of curing the thing itself. So the only way of seeing to that was that Pinchas realized that you had to do something really drastic. And he got his spear and he went in, and that was a shock. That was really shock treatment. Jeez, Pinchas is killing a Nossi of Shimon, and the daughter of a princess, just killing her and killing himself. Shoot. Everybody suddenly woke up in their tracks, and you know, they're saying, stop, everybody, get hold of yourself. This isn't how we've been brought up. This is not what Hashem wants. And the people, that had to stop the people. And this was Machata for the B'nai Yisrael, that Otsaham Magefor, and then the Magefor stopped. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu came reconciled with Am Yisrael. So really, what we see here is that in summary, the way that the whole thing went was that first the Am Yisrael got involved, the B'nai Smayov came along, they enticed them to come along, take part in our parties, take part in the power worship. More and more Yidden, you know, went in, got involved in this. They were so involved that you couldn't stop them. It was just impossible to stop them. And they were carrying on. The plague was rampant. By the time Pinchas came along, by the time this Mice of Zimri, this was already at the end of it, when Pinchas came, and then the Otsama gave us. So the 24,000 people were already, people were dying off every day. 24,000 people are dying, and they're still crying, Hey, Mubarak and Pesach Oil. And they're crying and crying, and yet they're still doing what Zimri is doing. As I say, he's not the only one. They're all doing it. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, or Pinchas, had to do drastic action, and he had to say, right, this is it. It can't go on like that. And in that way, the Magefa stopped. So now, when they come along and they fight against Midian, and they killed the people of Midian, so it says that Bilam, then Horubu B'Choriv, they killed Bilam, they killed him with a sword. What was Bilam doing in Midian? So Rashi says that he came to get his wages. I gave you good advice. I charge like all modern, all these professions nowadays, which are all eight together professions. So I gave you good advice. It works beyond my wildest dreams. You knocked off 28,000 people, so I deserve my wages. Of course, he got his wages. Well, Hashem, you know, the B'nai Yisrael gave him his desserts. But I saw another chat, a very interesting chat. What was Bilam doing in Midian? That Balak called him back. The Balak said to him, listen, the first time when you came, you couldn't curse B'nai Yisrael because the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't let you curse B'nai Yisrael. But now, B'nai Yisrael, they've fallen out with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kodesh was so angry with them, and he sent them a gate, he's really angry with them. Now come along and curse them, and now it'll really work. But of course, it was a big mistake. Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu had already taken care of it, and Pinchas, by Chaper B'nai Yisrael, he had already been Mechaper, so the B'nai Yisrael already had a Kaporo, and it was forgiven, and therefore it didn't help him to try to do anything against their Klal Yisrael. So this is really sort of a summary of the whole thing, how it all held together, and what happened in the end, you know, with Bilam. And that's why Pinchas did this great thing. He got the Nobel Peace Prize, but he now Bris Shalom. He gave him the Bris of Shalom, because the only way how we can have Shalom, and today we're all looking for Shalom in Eretz Yisrael, Shalom in the whole world, you know, it's funny things happening in the whole world. the only way how we can have shalom. You know, you can't make shalom, you can't create shalom. You can have the greatest technology, and we can today create amazing little chips that call it amazing what we can do today. But make a bit of shalom, make shalom between two people, shouldn't we? No, that we can't do. The whole world's biggest brains come together and they can't make shalom. Only the Bnei Shalom can make shalom. I always said, I say shalom bim roimov, who yas the shalom? It's only a Kaddish Baruch Hu who can make shalom. And if we want the Kaddish Baruch Hu to make shalom, then we've got to make our peace with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. We've got to make shalom with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and then the Kaddish Baruch Hu will see that we live for shalom.